Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Guilford Adams is the owner and chief executive clown of the Los Angeles Clown Company. He has performed for over 50,000 kids and 4,000 parties in the past 25 years as a clown. As a clown, Guilford has also been on The Morning Show, Glee, Modern Family, Lucifer, Big Time Rush, and dozens of other shows and commercials, both in and out of clown makeup. Guilford has plenty of regional theatre credits as well, including South Coast Rep, LA Opera, and the Mark Taper or CTG theaters. American Clown is his first directorial effort for a documentary film. An overview of the American Clown documentary. As the American narrative towards bozos, in inverted commas, sours, a working clown goes on a journey of discovery to find hope for an ever-changing profession. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing his journey in the entertainment creative world, and his directorial debut on American Clown, is Guilford Adams. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Hey, well, I'm actually in just outside of Los Angeles, in a place called Yucca Valley, and it's right by Joshua Tree. I'm here with my family vacationing, but I am doing outstanding because we're on a little bit of a vacation.
So now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? You want to be in this creative world, this acting world, this clown world, and how did that journey progress?
You know, I did dabble in this when I was in junior high. So it was seventh and eighth grade. I learned a lot about clowning and got involved in my church and learned how to kind of do balloon animals, made my own clown outfit, all that sort of stuff. And then, like many people, I got sidetracked in high school and got into sports and that sort of stuff and girls and, you know, the usual stuff. And then in college, when I kind of got out of sports, I really had a lot of energy and I got into acting. And it was really through acting and being a physical athlete that I kind of gravitated towards kind of a physical performance. So that was where clowning kind of stepped back in and kind of reentered my life. And when I moved to LA, an actor needs to have their weeks open for auditions. So I started a clown company and I started doing that on the weekends. And I still do that 25 years later.
What do you enjoy about acting?
Oh, you know, I love storytelling. I mean, that's what I am primarily, is I'm a storyteller, because acting was the first discipline that I kind of learned to tell that story. And now I've gotten into writing and all that sort of stuff. But I love the transformation, the quality that you can live in different times and see different people. I love that. You know, like we all want to live what it was like in the 1800s or the 1900s, but we don't really want to do it. It's impossible to really do.
Yes.
So we would just like to do it for a couple of weeks. That's kind of what I like to do. Like, I don't want to live the life of a fireman, but I love to play one.
At what point did you think, cool, I want to now move into the behind the scenes, such as writing? And was that an easy process to do, or was it quite challenging?
You know, I've always been a bit of a writer. I've always written songs and a musician. And so I've always kind of done the writing aspect of it. But with the clowning and getting into the doc, I kind of felt like I was, I wouldn't say forced to, but there was an element where the program that I was in, working as an assistant to Ronald McDonald, it had stopped. And it was going to be, the field program was going to be no more. And so I thought, well, I should be documenting this because this is never going to happen again. I was the only person to do it. I was the reluctant leader, as it were. And so I started kind of documenting that, as well as all my other friends who were losing their jobs, just thinking, I don't know what we're going to do with this, but we need to get it real time.
Tell us more. It's called American Clown, and let's unpack it.
Absolutely. So American Clown really started, I had a producer that was talking to me probably 2014, and he's a friend, and he was like, oh, we should document your life, and it's very interesting, and I just did not at the time think it was that compelling. So this friend had reached out to me, wanted to document this film, And I, at the time, I kind of passed because it didn't seem like it was the right thing. But then 2 years later, the program I was in was about to end. I worked for the owners and operators of Southern California McDonald's. And I worked as an assistant to Ronald McDonald in the field. And so I thought, well, this is going to end. We should document this. This is really happening. And at the same time, Barnum and Bailey Circus was ending. And a bunch of programs were all getting rid of their clowns. And so I said, we should talk to other clowns. This is not just happening to me. It's happening to lots of people. And then soon later, where, you know, the pandemic hit, and then everybody was out of job. So as we started kind of all of us, everybody kind of like clawing our way out of these trenches that we built for ourselves, I thought, well, we should be discussing kind of where clowns are these days and what's going on. Because at that same time, I don't know what it was like in South Africa, but at the same time, there was a giant sort of like, and still to this day, this sort of horror clown presence that really was taking a lot of the oxygen in the room. Everyone's talking about horror clowns, and, you know, it just felt like there wasn't room for your sort of like your nice party clowns anymore. It felt like we were being marginalized with these other clowns. And I've got nothing bad to say about them necessarily. It's just we were kind of being thrown out, baby in the bathwater, with these other clowns.
So have things turned around since then, or is it still challenging for you and your colleagues to get work with all these things closing, or things are happening or moving forward?
You know, I think things are restructuring. I would say that a lot of these jobs aren't coming back. The corporate jobs and the job that I did with McDonald's is not coming back in the way that it was. Barnum and Bailey is back, but they don't have clowns like they did. Kids parties are still happening, but I just saw that they're going to have a new series for Pennywise. So I think we have to learn to live with the horror clown and the success of that clown. We just need to find a better way to I think, find other clown ambassadors that aren't a horror clown to kind of continue the legacy that, you know, I think is very rich in America for the past 100 years.
Why do you think, besides the aspect of the horror clown, that people have this fear of the clowns? Because I've spoken to a lot of people or over the period of time, and they say, you know, they can take it or leave it, but I have heard from a lot of people, oh no, the clowns freak them out.
You know, I think it's fashionable a little bit for clowns to freak people out. People bond over disliking stuff more than they bond over liking stuff. I think it's kind of a human trait. So people are out there saying, oh, I dislike it. And I think it builds community. I understand that. I think if you really ask somebody, if I think they call it chlorophobia, is it like a chlorophobia? If they really have that sort of that, you know, it's like 0.01. But people that say they're scared of the clowns are like 20% of the people. So I think it's a way of building community ultimately. But I will say that I also think having a lack of visibility within the clown community of successful clowns, like Tuttle's Pity Party is successful, but we need more clowns like that, that really create a positive spin on clowns, that all of our ambassadors aren't horror clowns.
What we see a clown at a circus who does a couple of acts. What is the preparation time? What does it mean to get into that character? Let's unpack your definition of what it means to be a clown.
You could be a clown. I don't think a clown have to have makeup. I think a lot of clowns do have makeup. It makes it easy to identify who's a clown and who's not a clown. I think a clown would need a certain set of skills. That could be wordplay. That could be juggling. That could be a balancing skill. I think you need to have some sort of regimented sort of toolbox for some skills to be considered, I think, I'll call it a working clown. You could be a clown without that skill set, and possibly you're just not going to work as much. There are those clowns. I also think that you need to have something inside of you that is a desire to entertain, and a part of your heart that is compassionate, that you want to lift others up that are struggling. I think that's something inherent in a clown, and you can't really teach. I've met very few clowns that just don't have compassion in their heart, you know, and I'm not sure I think that might be an integral part of being a clown. Do you need a red nose? No. Do Do you need big clown shoes? No. Do you need makeup? No. We have some famous clowns on TV shows that if you really break it down, you could say, oh, that's a clown. Like I used this the other day as a Seinfeld. You're familiar with the show Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And if I go through some characters and I ask you, is this person a clown? You could pretty quickly say yes or no. And I'll try it right now with you, Barrett. Kramer. Is Kramer a clown?
Possibly, yes.
I would say, yeah. Is George a clown?
Again, yeah. Yeah, possibly. I mean, I'd say all in thinking as you're speaking, like all the comedic type of shows, there are quite a few of the characters are. Like, if I think of Will and Grace, Jack and Karen. If I think of Big Bang Theory, this is the tall guy's character, Jim Parsons' character. In fact, all of their characters could actually be clowns in a certain way. Yeah, absolutely. There is obviously then a linkage between comedy and being a clown.
Absolutely. And I think part of it, it stems also with situational comedy specifically. Not like there's a lack of internal growth, you know, like that these characters are the same episode in and episode out. And I think part of me, to get back to one of your earlier queries, you know, part of me, what's always attracted me to clowns, I think it's very much what we're like human nature-wise. You know, we tend to not grow that much as far as a temperament and knowledge and whatever else. We tend not to avoid the same mistakes we did previously, you know, like a dog would often or a child. So I think that something storyline that always really fascinated me is that, you know, we tend from point A to point B. We're not going to drift a lot. We just know not, like, it's always funny in Philadelphia. A storyline like that, they would say, like, you know, at the end of the episode, like, well, don't eat from dumpsters. That was the bad idea. And so I kind of think in clowning, it kind of works the same way.
So in creating this documentary, you said that you weren't initially going to do it, and then you decided to do it. Were there any aspects of the actual process that actually surprised you that you're like, oh, I didn't realize that this would be part of the process?
We spent a long time reaching out to a bunch of clowns, and we have some familiar faces in there. We have John C. Reilly in the documentary. Steve-O is in the documentary. David Arquette, who bought the rights to Bozo the Clown, is in the documentary. David Howard Thornton, who's a horror clown. I think talking to these clowns, like talking to David Howard Thornton and realizing who's playing a horror clown in the Terrifier movies as Art the Terrifier, how much of a clown he is. And in the same way, the things that he responds to as a performer is the same things that I respond to as a performer. He just happens to be doing it in a horror movie. The same thing with J.J. Harrison, who's a rodeo clown, an American clown. He is a rodeo clown. But as he's talking about, you know, his experience being a clown and the same sort of frightening aspects of telling his parents he wants to be a clown and being out there and talking about what it means to be a clown and saying you have to have the heart of a clown. And he says something about you can't just put on clown makeup and make somebody a clown, which is so true. It really transcends any sort of landscape or backdrop. Being a clown is something that comes from within. And depending on our environment, we're able to facilitate it in that sort of setting. And I guess I just didn't have the fact that we were closer aligned than not. I didn't know that going into it. I just thought like, oh, these people maintain the same profession I do, albeit using a different set of skills and circumstances. And I was kind of intrigued to find out we are much more alike than we're different.
I'm not sure if you have the answer to this or if there isn't a relationship, but while you're speaking, I'm thinking of, you know, the mimes, you know, that they do their characters or their presentation or their shows. Is there any overlap or in historically any overlap between miming and being a clown?
Oh, absolutely. I would say there's a heavy overlap between the two. The only difference is clowns speak, and a lot of clowns try not to speak as a clown, but I would say there is no they are sister or brother professions. There is no profession closer. A larger outlier would be like puppets, you know, because in the same way, puppet work and mask work. But if that originates from a physical aspect as opposed to like the physical putting that into action through your character and through your body. But I would say mimes and brothers they're not even cousins. They could be of the same family.
We've got the release of the documentary coming out shortly. What else is happening over the next period of time?
Well, so we're going to have this documentary. It's going to be the premiere at Dances with Films here in Hollywood on June 23rd at 7 p.m., which is a Monday, which is great. And then after that, we're hoping to get some sort of distribution deal in place. We also have potentially some other film festivals we will be at throughout the remainder of the year. There might even be a small theatrical run. And then as far as me personally, I've got another feature film coming out called Better Than a Shovel that hopefully will be out by the end of the year. It's been in post-production for a bit. And I'm working on a new series with about being a clown with twins, which is kind of what I have now, about being a married clown with twins. And so that's going to be hopefully finished by the end of the year. And then we will look for buyers for that as well.
Is that going to be a comedy show or a dramatic show?
It will be a comedy. Be a comedy. I think a little bit in the sort of the world of Better Things or Louie, kind of like maybe a quick, it could either be a three camera or a single camera. Uh-huh. This kind of the direction that it's going.
The intention in creating the documentary, you had a specific intention. As you were doing it and creating it and going through the process, did that intention come through at the end, or were there other aspects that came through that you didn't realize would come through while you were doing it?
You know, Baird, that's a great question. I think that we had an idea of where we wanted the documentary to go, and it kind of ended up going slightly differently than that. And so I think I kind of wanted to end on a little bit more of a rosier sort of outlook on clowning in general. There's a lot of success stories with medical clowning and being like a medical clown, or what Tuttle's Pity Party, who's doing a lot of that stuff. And, you know, there is still a lot of action in kids' backyards all across the country. But it kind of ended up in a slightly different place. And I think the end of the documentary tends to be, I think right now it's a little bit more of a call to action on kind of what's going on, and should this be a worry? And unfortunately, here in America, we're on the backdrop of, I think some real authoritarian impulses. And so part of me does wonder about, you know, us killing off the voices, the truth tellers, and what that means for our society. So this could be just a little bit more of a canary in the coal mine for, I think, larger things on the horizon. But, I'll let the viewers decide, you know, how they want to chime in on that.
So this is my observation and perception. And I'd like to know from you, being in the suit, in the energy, in the body, and knowing others who are the same, clowns about comedy, a sort of self-deprecation in the sense like walking to walls and, you know, like comedic in that way. But there's often a scenario or an energy around a clown of being sad, if you know what I'm trying to say. There's that sad feeling. Is that just because of perceptions and societal elements that have put that there? What are your thoughts of my comment now?
You know, I will say, people, that's often a question that's asked me a lot is, you know, are you a sad clown or are you a happy clown? And while I always respond to that, and I don't think it's incorrect for me, as I say, all clowns are sad. We're all sad. You know, that's kind of why we're clowns, that we find joy in making out of other people laugh. Okay. And that's why we have to do it. Much like an addict tries to get something to make themselves feel better, that's our drug of choice. And I think that just in a larger thing, that's where all great comedy comes from. Again, this is my perception. Mm-hmm. Comedy comes from very, very dark places. But I like that. I'm attracted to humor like that. I like more than just dark humor. I like gallows humor. So I think it just reminds us that this is futile. It's how we deal with it and how we kind of the grace that we have in going through this, because, no one gets out of this alive. We're all going to die. How do we respond to that? And I think that's a big part of clowning. I will say that I think that there is a perception clowning has always represented the times You know, in the 30s, we had the hobo clown that was very popular, and that Kelly kind of originated that. And then in the 50s and the 60s, we had more of the corporate clown and the bozo and the Ronald and that sort of stuff. And as we creep into, you know, the 21st century, the horror clown kind of dominate the space. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to how we feel about things with climate change on the horizon and everything else that, like, you know, this is the clown we've chosen. But I think there is something to that. But I think the one sort of characteristic that seems to be kind of true throughout is a sort of sadness, because I think there is a sort of a nod to humanity, a bittersweetness that we have when talking about the fragile state of humanity. And that's ongoing. And so I think there is a perception with clowns being sad,
yeah,
or at least having a bed of sadness from which they spring from.
Do you think, I was just thinking as you're talking now, during the 20s, I think it was 20s, 30s, there were the silent movies. Yeah. And if you think of the comedy, Charlie Chaplin, all those type of movies, of the silent movies, it was very much on the screen, a representation of, inverted commas, of what clowns were, you know, became of in the circuses and that. And maybe this is a rhetorical question, or you may not know. Do you think the rise of the silent movie helped elevate the success of being a clown and made it more seen, in inverted commas, in the world?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, the silent movies put that, because the reason that they had to do things physically like that,
yeah,
is because there was no sound.
Yes.
The Buster Keaton, the Charlie Chaplin, a lot of them, except for Charlie Chaplin, they didn't transition to sound. Buster Keaton never spoke. Harold Lloyd never spoke. The Three Stooges, I mean, they spoke. But, you know, it was really that evolution. And then you get into the Marx Brothers and on and on. So I think absolutely it elevated. And that was bringing, what we see here is vaudeville going to film, which is what they did. And then the minute things started talking, we saw a big manner. But now we've gotten to such a small amount of acting that less is more, because the film sees it. So I think we've gone through the hourglass, which started off big physical and clowning, and is something much smaller. But I think that there's a real appetite for today's generation and for 30 below to explore some of these larger art forms. And I think in a way it brings them closer to where we were and to what we've become. And so that's exciting to me. I think there's a resurgence of a lot of people that are interested in clowning, because it's an old art form, you know, that I think makes us feel closer. There's something about us that want to hold on to that.
Well, I think the younger generations, they like, because everything's on the phone, they're looking for things that might be used to the older generations. Like, for example, the comeback of the physical CDs, vinyls, cassettes, massive comeback. All these things that are tangible, that are not in the cloud, that are not on the phone, that they can have an experience with beyond the phone. And that sounds like clowning is another box that can be added to that list for the younger kids to say, okay, well, now I want to experience this.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think, and as we get further and further into AI and what that does, I think there will be a real desire for people to see the physical and to see things that are real. And so I think there's always going to be a market for clowning. There's always going to be a niche. It's been evolving ever since, you know, we've had talkies. You know, it's constantly evolving. We've just really, you know, we're just seeing the new evolution now.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
You know, hold on to your clown. All that's innocent, all that's true, all that makes you smile and giggle, let's give that to the next generation. I'm a big believer in we should be planting trees for whose shade we'll never bask in, you know, or be in. So I think what we need to do is we need to keep pushing forward. Don't lose our kid. You know, don't lose the kid inside of us, the one that's vulnerable and sweet and lovely. And let's share that with the next generation. Because I think there's something we can get down in the muck about how things are horrible, but we can also just celebrate the small successes. And so I challenge all of us to do that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.